All right. Nebraska Court of Appeals is now in session. May all who come here be heard. May truth and justice be served by what we do here.
Thank you. You may be seated. Good morning. I am Mike Pirtle, and I'm pleased to welcome you to the December morning panel of the Nebraska Court of Appeals. I'm joined today on my right by Judge Dave Arterburn of Papillion, and on my left by Judge Larry Welch of Plattsmouth. We have three cases this morning. We will take them in the order listed. I will remind you that we are live streaming on NET, and also these will be archived for review later. So if we have any sensitive material, you might keep that in mind in referring to either your clients or your witnesses in those records. So with that, we will start with the first case, which is Klein versus Klein. Counsel may approach. Good morning. You may come up.
Good morning. Good morning.
You may proceed. Thank you.
May it please the court and counsel for the appellees, please note the appearance of Rodney Dahlquist on behalf of the appellant, Louis Klein. The case before you today is an appeal from the District Court of Cass County, in which the trial court heard a number of issues relating to the Klein family farming and ranching operation. There was a wide variety of issues that were heard, including the ownership of farm ground, but the issues before the court today are more narrow, specifically relating to two judgments. One entered against Lewis for unjust enrichment with respect to his storage of grain in bins located on farm ground owned by the conservatorship, and two, a judgment entered in his favor with respect to conversion of his grain that was stored also in a bin that was on conservatorship ground. Now, with respect to the judgment for unjust enrichment entered in favor of the conservatorship, the district court erred as a matter of law as it came to the judgment specifically regards to the bins that were located on what was referred to as Dad's Place. Now, up to 2016, Lewis and his father, Eugene, had kind of co-farmed and co-operated the ranching, the functions together. And during that time, Lewis had been utilizing the bins that were located on Dad's Place and Grandpa's Place. And because of the way that they were operating as kind of a family unit, there was no agreement and he wasn't being charged for the use of those bins. Now, in 2016, a conservatorship was established for Eugene, and Mike and Sharon were appointed as the conservators for their father. And at that time, the conservatorship entered into leases for Dad's Place and varying times, but from 2016 on, it was leased to either Mike as a tenant or George. And those leases specifically included the use of not just the Dad's Place farm ground, but also the Dad's Place bins. And while unjust enrichment might be an option in the absence of an express agreement, because starting in 2016, there was an express agreement for the use of Dad's Place bins, that supplanted and superseded the right to go after or to seek a judgment against Lewis for unjust enrichment. And I guess two points are relevant here. First would be, this was an action brought by the conservatorship and not by any individual tenant who was claiming, I didn't have the ability to use these bins that were located on Dad's Place that I was leasing. Also, the testimony and evidence at trial established that the payments were actually made by the tenants to the conservatorship. So there was a lease, payments were laid pursuant to the lease, and to permit both the conservatorship to get both the unjust enrichment judgment and collect on that, and retain the payments under the terms of the lease itself would be essentially double recovery for the same items.
Mr. Dahlquist, was there any evidence that the conservatorship compensated the tenant for the lack of ability to use those bins?
There was. I believe that number was about 30,000, and I don't have the exact number in front of me. I believe it was about 30,000 or so. The issue with that and the issue with permitting that to be then passed through onto Lewis is there's an absence of authority that was presented from the probate court overseeing the guardianship or the conservatorship, rather. In order for a conservator to be paid from a conservatorship account, you need some judicial oversight, some judicial permission to do that. What we have here is just an assertion that, well, the conservatorship may have compensated the tenant, which, again, we have conflict of interest because it's Mike serving as conservator and Mike paying himself as the tenant, this amount that was purportedly to be for non-payment of the bins, but we don't have the corresponding or the requisite authority from the probate court to do so.
So are you also, in essence, arguing that Michael was the real party in interest, not the conservatorship?
It could have been to seek an unjust enrichment or some type of, you know, compensation for non-use of the bins. I guess I see really two different lawsuits that could have been filed. The first could have been Michael against Lewis, or it could have been Michael, which would have been a little bit awkward, against the conservatorship for non-use. However, the one that was presented was the conservatorship versus Lewis. And because of that, and because of the existence of those express leases, there's just no ability to recover as a matter of law for unjust enrichment under that scenario.
I have a problem with your client being the beneficiary of that argument, given his actions in this case. How would you respond to that? I mean, why should he benefit when he's the one that didn't pay and didn't take his grain out of the bins?
And I don't know that it's necessarily, from the conservatorship's perspective is I believe the best way to view the situation. And the conservatorship purportedly has negotiated and presumably would negotiate at arm's length to lease out not just the farm ground for Dad's place, but also the bins that would be included on that ground. And if the conservatorship did it in an arm's length fashion and was compensated pursuant to the terms of that lease, which the evidence shows that it in fact was, then I believe that militates against, you know, some type of equitable finding that would go against Lewis, particularly in a case that is brought by the conservatorship in which it was presumably compensated in full for the terms of the lease that it entered into. If there is any recovery or recourse that could be had, I believe a different case, and I believe you're bringing this up, Judge, would be the case of Mike against Lewis, or maybe potentially the conservatorship. Either of those two potential defendants Mike has recourse against, but the specific facts that we presented was that the conservatorship sued Lewis for essentially a double recovery, as I view it, Judge.
I didn't find any, but was there anything in the record that at any time there had been any kind of a written assignment between the conservatorship and Michael, or from Michael to the conservatorship to pursue the unjust enrichment argument?
Not to my knowledge, and I don't believe there was in the record, no.
So I got to follow back up with the point that you made earlier. So if the conservatorship did pay $30,000 to Michael, because Michael couldn't use the bins, what is your argument that there was no authority from the probate court? The probate court sets up Michael as a conservator. What authority are you talking about that? Or do you need to make that payment?
The letters of conservatorship were specifically offered and received into evidence, and those letters say in there that you are not allowed to compensate yourself as the conservator. You're not allowed to, essentially withdraw funds from the conservatorship account to pay yourself, especially something on the magnitude. It really doesn't matter the amount, but particularly when we're talking about tens of thousands of dollars purportedly for non-use of bins, what we don't have is that commensurate authority that was you know, given from the probate court or should have been sought from the probate court, first and foremost, to, I think, do two things. One, justify the amount of, you know, to non-use of, for non-use of those bins. I believe it's somewhat suspicious when you look at the amount that was compensated to Michael versus the amount that was paid under the terms of the lease for rent. Those numbers, when you juxtapose the two, don't necessarily seem to add up to compensation just for the bins. So in order for Michael to comply with his requirements as a conservator and follow the terms of the letters, it was required for him to first go to the probate court and seek that approval.
Mr. Dahlquist, I mean, if...
I'm sorry, the letters of conservatorship.
Or letters of conservatorship, I'm sorry, require on their face that he, before he makes that payment, he has to get approval from the court?
I believe the language is you are not allowed to compensate yourself, and I don't know the exact language of what's on the face of it, but essentially it's a prohibition for the conservator so that they're not withdrawing funds from the conservatorship account. It requires oversight to do so.
Were those letters of conservatorship offered into evidence in this case?
They were.
So they're part of the exhibits?
They are. Okay. I don't know exactly which exhibit that is, but yes.
And did you raise that argument in the court below?
I believe I did. I'm not going to sit here and say with 100% certainty that I did. I believe the argument was more a lack of damages on the part of the conservatorship. But I don't believe it would be something that this court should overlook, and it certainly could be plain error on its face in that circumstance. And I see my time is up.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you, Judge.
Good morning, Ms. Baer.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel Julie Baer appearing on behalf of the appellees Eugene Klein and Marcine Klein. The evidence on appeal is construed or viewed in the light most favorable to Eugene and Marcine Klein as to the controverted facts involving grain storage and the rate charged and the number of bins or the quantity that the district court assessed. And because that district court judgment has the effect of a jury verdict, it is not to be disturbed on appeal unless you find that the district court was clearly wrong in its determination. Our judgment for grain storage and that cause of action is rooted in the theory of unjust enrichment. Lewis Klein, who had farmed with his father for a number of years, was sent a formal demand to remove his grain, to remove his equipment from Klein family farm ground as soon as the conservators were appointed in this case. And that conservatorship proceeding was appealed, and as soon as that affirmance was made, there was another demand made, which is the demarcation point for the district court's determination that Lewis Klein owed storage on the five bins that are located on the parcel referred to as Dad's Place starting May 1st of 2018 through November 1, 2018, when Lewis Klein and or Mike Klein, acting as conservator, removed Lewis's grain from the remaining bins on the Dad's Place parcel. The appellant goes to great lengths in the brief to argue that Marcine and Eugene Klein received some tremendous double recovery for the award of damages as it relates to the bins on Dad's Place. I don't think there was any proof at trial that the appellees received any sort of double recovery.
Well, weren't the bins part of the lease compensation that Michael had on his lease?
Yes.
So they were compensated through that lease agreement, correct?
They were, but there was some accommodation made by Eugene and Marcine Klein to their farm tenant, as outlined by Mr. Dahlquist. And they are certainly conceptually on the hook. They're in breach of that lease term as it applies to the tenants during that overlapping period. So they have exposure.
But isn't really Michael the one that's out? Isn't, I mean, he's paying your clients through the lease for the bins. He didn't get to use the bins for his own grain. So isn't, and that's why I get back to, isn't he in essence the real party in interest for that claim?
I don't believe so. And I don't think he'd have any privity of contract to file suit against Lewis Klein, certainly. He could sue his parents, but I don't think that's necessary. I think that the owners of the farm parcels as lessors have the ability to pursue their other son, their former tenant, if you will, for the holdover. And, you know, the analogy I think is, if I lease my house for a year to a tenant and I tell the tenant they've got to mow the yard, but I'm going to furnish you a mower, only that mower is taken by my previous tenant and withheld for 8 months, my current tenant isn't going to be excused from paying me the rent, because use of that mower is really kind of incidental to the lease. And so my current tenant still has to pay me rent. It's up to me to pursue the return of that mower from my prior tenant and to force my prior tenant to compensate me, because I'm on the hook to the current tenant. So I think that's this scenario, and I don't think there's been any sort of double recovery.
Do you recall Mr. Dahlquist making the double recovery argument in the lower court?
Yes.
He did make that to the court.
Yes.
Ms. Baer, I want to ask you, I asked a question to Mr. Dahlquist. I said, was there evidence that the conservatorship reimbursed Michael for the loss of storage? And he said yes, and I assume that he's talking about the request number at the end of the trial. Exhibit 23 came in, which was request for production, and specifically request number 13 was what was received, and it says produce all documents which support the assertion that plaintiffs have been damaged. And the response is, please see the attached farm lease and checks written to the farm tenant for loss of storage as follows. And then there's three checks listed for loss of storage, all of which would be have been written in the 1 year period of the 2018 lease. Now the puzzling part of that is that the amount of those three checks is more than the rent for that period. But I mean, if those three checks, the $32,000 worth of checks, were written to Michael, then doesn't that not support the conservatorship would actually be the real party in interest?
Yes, I believe so. I believe the conservatorship, which is Eugene and Marcine Klein,
right,
that the owners are the real parties in interest, yes.
Okay. I just didn't see that in any of your arguments, and so I was wondering, am I missing something here? Are these three checks for something other than the loss of grain storage?
No. Now, you know, because of the farm operation, you know, the highs and lows and the income stream, I'm not certain that those checks are fully representative only of 2018. It may be for a longer period of time, but that was the amount.
Nonetheless, it is for grain storage.
Reimbursed, yes.
Okay.
Yes. And of course, that the double recovery argument doesn't apply whatsoever to the seven bins. I think the court assessed Lewis Klein for using four of the seven bins on the parcel identified as Grandpa's Place, because those were not subject to a lease. Those were custom farmed.
Let me just follow up with one other question. So if an owner leases land to somebody, that tenant has a possessory right to that land. If somebody refuses to to leave the land, isn't it the tenant that brings that action to have them removed, not the owner, because the bundle of sticks, so to speak, have been, you know, reverted? Isn't that how we define real and party interest in situ- and how would that be different than here when we're talking about a bin and storage?
I think the real party in interest is the landowner, even if the land has been subject to a lease. I don't think there's any privity between the past tenant and the current tenant. I think if the current tenant sued to eject the prior tenant, the court would say you're not in privity, you don't have standing to file that litigation. I would also like to quickly address the storage rate. The district court assessed a 5 cent per bushel per month fee against Lewis Klein. There was testimony from Michael Klein as the co-conservator that he's been engaged in a farming enterprise for about 45 years, both row crop, livestock, was very familiar with the going rate for grain storage. I think it's important to note he testified without objection that his opinion of fair market value for grain storage was the 5 cent figure. I think that was bolstered by Lewis Klein, who testified to a range between 3 cents and 5 cents, but essentially buttressed the testimony of Michael Klein. The district court also did not err in calculating the number of bins. Lewis Klein had his grain on the Grandpa's Place parcel, fully occupying three of the bins up until the time of trial.
Ms. Bear, I do have one more question before we run out of time. Did the plaintiff ever raise the issue of prejudgment interest during the course of the trial?
No. And I think it's important to note, if you look at the answer to plaintiff's amended complaint and amended counterclaim, the fifth and sixth causes of action both deal with the grain check that was deposited into the conservatorship account. One of those causes of action is rooted in unjust enrichment. The other is conversion. I think the interest is only available with respect to the conversion claim. The district court does not identify in awarding that money to Lewis Klein whether it's pursuant to the conversion claim or the unjust enrichment claim. It simply awards the money. And so I don't think the prejudgment interest is available to Lewis Klein.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. How far did we take her over?
37 seconds, Your Honor.
And there was no other rebuttal time?
Correct. We went over 5 seconds.
All right. Do you want 37 seconds of rebuttal time, or would you like to waive it?
If I have 37 seconds, I will take full advantage of it.
Okay.
And the only point I would raise in those moments would be, with respect to the storage on Grandpa's Place, the testimony at trial was both parties testified that Lewis was actually only using three of the bins. And if you look at the testimony with respect to the bin capacity, I believe Lewis's testimony was 24,000 bushels. Michael's testimony was 24,000 or 27,000 bushels. So the 50,000 bushel number utilized by the district court was contradictory to the evidence. And I'm out of time.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks so much. All right. The matter is submitted. We thank you both for being here. You're excused, and we will issue an opinion down the road. Thank you.